Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special Empire Podcast interview special. Kenny Dalglish is the name of the latest documentary from Asif Kapadia, the British filmmaker who has become one of the masters of the modern doc, with films like Senna, Amy, and Diego Maradona. And Kenny Dalglish is the name of this movie's subject. If you're unfamiliar, Dalglish is one of the greatest footballers of all time, quite frankly, a kid from Glasgow who grew up to become an icon for the green and white half of that city, Celtic, and then moved south of the border in 1977 to Liverpool, and there he has stayed to this day, carving out a wildly successful career at Anfield as both a player and then, improbably, as player-manager and then manager. Not only did he win the previously elusive double of League Championship and FA Cup in his first season as manager of Liverpool in 1986, he scored the goal that won Liverpool a league title at Chelsea's ground, Stamford Bridge. Real Roy of the Rovers stuff. If you're a regular listener to the Empire podcast, you will know that I'm a huge Liverpool fan, as is Kapadia. And Kenny Dalglish, or King Kenny, as he is affectionately known, means a great deal to me. And so I was absolutely delighted, over the moon, you might even say, to get the invite to talk to him and Asif together at a London hotel just last week. What you're about to hear is that chat, which is principally focused on the documentary and how it came about and Kenny's involvement in it. What it isn't is me fanboying out and asking him loads of questions about playing and managing Liverpool, much as I wanted to do that. One other thing before we begin, I know this is a long intro, but please bear with me. The Heysel and Hillsborough disasters are given a huge amount of focus in the film, particularly Hillsborough, which forms the last 20-25 minutes of the movie. This interview also reflects that, as I wanted to ask Dalglish about revisiting Hillsborough for the documentary, and I wanted to ask Kapadia about his decision to end the film by focusing on Hillsborough and on Dalglish's decision to resign from Liverpool 2 years later, and to not include the second half of Kenny's managerial career with Blackburn Rovers, Newcastle United, briefly Celtic, and then again at Anfield in 2011. His answer is fascinating, as is Dalglish himself. He's an incredibly stoic, down-to-earth guy with a handshake befitting a man who loves iron brew. It's made of girders. And one of the themes that runs through Kapadia's film, which is narrated after a fashion by Dalglish himself, is Kenny's utterly selfless mindset, something that allowed him to be the creator supreme on the pitch and an incredible source of support to the Hillsborough families off it. I think that shines through in this interview, and it's something I wanted to highlight and talk about. And if you want to see the film, it is out today, Wednesday, 29th of October, and tomorrow, Thursday, 30th of October, in cinemas across the country. And then it'll be on Prime Video next week from November 4th. All right, enough prattling from me. Here it is, Asif Kapadia and Kenny Dalglish talking about Kenny Dalglish. Your audience with the king awaits.
Asif Kapadia, Kenny Dalglish, the creator supreme, welcome to the Empire Podcast. How are you both?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good, good, good. Asif?
Very good. Very, very excited to be here.
Excited to have you here. Excited to talk about this man and this documentary. And the reason I said those words, the creator supreme, is that is a piece of commentary that I have loved. It's been stuck in my head for years. and I'm so glad you included it in the documentary. Is it the same for you? Was that something that stuck in your head, first of all?
Which match are you talking about then?
I can't remember which match it is exactly, but it's the Rushy scores a goal and it's the combination that goes Kenny Dalglish, the creator supreme. Yeah.
Watford.
Okay.
And you put it in front of behind the defender and
I think it's Watford, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a great goal.
That's a hell of a piece of commentary as well. So you were putting it, your stuff, your list of things to include together.
I mean, I'll be honest, that's got to be in there. I started with the goals and the commentary came with it. So I'm like, okay, the great one that you do similar put from the other side, like on your left foot, the curler for Scotland. There's so many brilliant moments. The back heel assist, as we would call them these days, but the pass that you do to Phil Neal.
Oh, against Aberdeen.
Amazing.
Kenny, are these moments like laser burned into your mind, or were the goals watching this documentary back that you hadn't, that you'd forgotten, essentially?
No. Watching it back, refresh my memory. No, I don't have such a recall. I think it suits me when which ones I can remember and which ones I can't. Probably the best ones are to forget, the ones I missed.
The ones that aren't goals.
No, but it's just when you look at the goals on the documentary,
yeah,
obviously they're quite fresh in your mind.
Yeah, very much so. What's the one that stands out for you? What's the, if you had to pick one from any of the goals that are in the documentary, I think there's one that I imagine would stick in your mind, is the one against Chelsea.
To win the title.
Is that the one you would pick above all others?
Well, the most important thing about goals, isn't it? It's not if you've lost a game.
Yeah.
The goal doesn't count, doesn't matter. Yeah. It's no relevant. That one was a reward for all the hard work that everybody had done at the football club. I just had the privilege of scoring the goal.
Mm.
And if it had been somebody else, I don't care.
Yeah.
As long as we win. So I just chipped in my 10 pence worth with a goal the last game of the season, and everybody that is taking part throughout the whole year, the fans, especially the players.
Yeah.
Old Bob Paisley was there as well, and everybody at the football club, that's the important thing. Know that I scored it.
Yeah.
Just important that we scored it and we won.
I love that mindset because, you know, obviously it's such a Roy of the Rovers moment. You know, player manager in his first season scores the goal that wins Liverpool the league title. That is such a huge moment. But your mindset is just what you said there. And that mindset, I'm guessing, Asif, is one of the reasons why you wanted to make a documentary about Kenny in the first place.
Do you know, it's a really unusual one for me because I have these kind of, I like music, I like films. And I love football.
Yeah.
And football came first, okay, before it's my mum, it's my family, and then it was football. And like watching football, playing football, my first memory, I think, of TV, watching TV is the 1978 World Cup final. I kind of remember that as a first vision of it. I'm sure I must have seen television before that, but it wasn't like something we didn't watch that much. But football has always been there. And you know, it's not a joke. I was a Liverpool fan. Kenny Dalglish was my favourite player. I had his picture up on my wall when I had a wall because we had loads of us kids, so we used to share a room, my sister. I didn't have a lot of wall space, to be honest. But to sort of follow Liverpool, support Liverpool, and then go to Anfield and away, wherever I could get a ticket.
Yeah.
And one day have the opportunity to be sitting here doing a podcast with you with Kenny is a bit mad.
Yeah,
when you think about it, and having made a film with Kenny and spent lots of time talking, and then we do my professional bit of making films, and I have to be honest, at the beginning I didn't know what this film was going to be, but I thought, is it possible to make a film which just focused on the football? Because I was like, people who are young don't know how brilliant Kenny was, so I would love to make a film that just says you don't know this player, because they don't necessarily talk about players before the Premier League, before the Champions League, and all of that now, but you need to know, my kids know Kenny through playing FIFA, so on their team they've got Kenny, Maradona, Cruyff, like everyone playing together. So I thought I'd love to make a film for my children's sort of generation. But then as I started interviewing people and as I started making it, I said, if you just make a film about Kenny that only focuses on football, you miss the point of the man.
Yeah.
And so that's when I realized we have to take the story through everything that happens while Kenny's a player, when Kenny becomes a player manager, and as manager, what happens to Liverpool during that period through the lens of his experience. That was what the film became. And actually, and then you realize he's even more amazing as a man than he was as a kid watching him on TV as a player, that the person and what they stand for is so much bigger than football.
Absolutely. Kenny, that's a lot to dig into there.
I think there's mistaken identity here. I think I'm the wrong person sitting here. I don't recognise him that you described it.
Well, listen, I mean, I know a little bit of what Asif's talking about, because I also had pictures of you up on my wall when I was a kid, and I am freaking out inside, and I'm trying desperately to maintain a professional demeanour. It's not working. It's not working at all. But when Asif came to you with this idea, what was your first reaction?
Yeah, it's no problem. Asif's reputation for his previous work obviously had been magnificent. So listen, if he wanted to have a go, I'll try my best to make it interesting.
What was the extent of your involvement at that point? Was he...
My involvement?
Yeah.
We were in the boardroom at Anfield.
Okay.
And he asked, and I said, well, I'll have a go if you want to have a go. And that was it.
We had never met, okay. So I was like, I don't know what Kenny's going to be like to interview. Would he be interested to talk, or does he not like doing interviews? So what I did say was, I have a particular style where I don't bring a crew. We don't have a camera. There's no lighting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just minimal people, and we just meet and we have a chat. And we have a conversation, and then we'll do all the rest. And I think that was the main thing I said. And that's kind of how I've made the previous films. And Kenny was like, okay, that'll be fine. And we would just meet and we'd have a chat.
We did it a few times.
Also, what he never mentioned, he had to bring the iron brew and the Cadbury's dairy milk for me.
He'd be like, do you want any coffee or tea, anything you want to eat? Do you want a sandwich? And literally iron brew?
Yeah.
And a big packet of family-sized packet of dairy milk.
So we're talking the big monsters, right? The big monster bar of dairy milk?
Or a full bag. Yeah, a full bag of buttons. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Any other chocolate, Kenny, or just dairy milk? Why that one?
Because I used to take it every Friday night when we were at home.
Right.
When I was playing for a little while.
The sports Marina scientists would not be happy to hear you say that.
Well, it never did me any harm.
Wasn't Peter Beardsley used to have a Mars bar before every game or something? Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure.
But that was the Mars bar thing was something that a lot of them were using before the games.
Right.
But I had this, I never told anybody. I just used to have my dinner on a Friday night, and Marina had a bottle of iron brew, and I had a bar of Cadbury's dairy milk. And I gave Marina the same squares, short, about three squares out of the big packet.
Yeah.
Every Friday. And I ate the rest.
It worked.
Well.
We're like gangbusters, clearly.
It gave me something to blame. And that was it.
So when was this meeting, this first meeting, in the Anfield boardrooms? Was
been
this...
trying to think about it, actually. So... I would say...
Season before last.
Do you think 22?
That's the season before last,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, 2022. I think it was in the Champions League, and it was leading up to Liverpool getting to the final in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was that season.
That was 22.
My memory was like a Napoli game or something like that, I think.
Okay.
And so the story goes is that there's a couple of producers, and Paul Dalglish, Kenny's son, and Ben contacted the club and said, look, anyone be interested in making a film about Kenny Dalglish? Like, do you know any Liverpool fans that make documentaries? And supposedly somebody at the club, and I don't know who it was, said, there's this guy Asif who really likes Liverpool and comes here. You might want to try him. So that's sort of how it came about. So they snuck me into the boardroom, because I don't normally get invited to the boardroom at Anfield.
Okay, yeah.
On the way in, I remember seeing Mo leaving.
Oh.
And I just said, I couldn't say anything. I said, Mo, I love you. And he just walked past me and turned around. I went, okay, I'm in the boardroom at Anfield, my one and only time. And then I meet Kenny and we have a chat. And Marina was there, and Kelly was there, and I spoke to Paul, and Michael Edwards was there, and I spoke to Michael Edwards. So yeah, and it was kind of Klopp period. It was kind of peak Klopp era.
Right, okay.
But that was the initial meeting. That's how it came about. And I thought, okay. And then films just take a bit of time to get up and running. Probably a year nearly goes by, or 9 months go by. You have to raise the finance, you have to get it all together, start doing research. And then the editor came on board, and we basically had a year and a half of intense making of the film.
And so Kenny, at that point, was it simply in terms of your involvement, was it sitting down with Asif and having a chat with him at that point, or did that come later, like the big sort of dig into your life and career?
He knew what had gone on. He'd done his homework.
Yeah.
So he didn't need to dig too deeply.
So he was just going, you would just ask. Okay.
I think we did about 3 or 4 interviews.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Would you say 3 or 4 times we met in Liverpool, and then once in London, and we found like little podcast studios or recording studios, one in Toxteth, one kind of near the ground. Another Kensington. One in London. You came down to London. We did one in Soho.
I thought it was Soho Square.
Yeah. There's a studio in Soho Square, exactly. So that was it. Yeah, every now and again we'd meet and we'd have a chat. And then Kenny and Marina kind of gave us lots of personal photographs and cuttings and stuff.
And there's like Christmas videos and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and there's some VHS tapes.
You ransacked the Dan Dalglish
VHS tapes that we digitized. Wow. And then lots of the home movies come from there. Because that was the thing. We went through them and we were like, Kenny's not in any of this material. And you realize, oh, Kenny's filming it all. Kenny's the one with the camera. And I love that moment when Marina says, Kenny, put the camera down. It's Christmas dinner. Put the camera down.
There's a bit where I think you're opening Christmas presents or doing crackers. And you say behind the camera, Paul, watch out, you're going to spill your soup. And he does that. He literally pulls the cracker and his soup goes flying all over him. So,
have you ever tried to clean tomato soup off the carpet? No, I think it's important for anybody to show, I mean, obviously, whatever your sport was, but to show the family as well.
Yeah.
That's usually important. And for ourselves, we've been lucky, as I said to Marina. It's the best fiver I've ever spent. So,
well, on the fish and chips and taking her out that night.
No, on the wedding certificate.
On the wedding certificate, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got Kelly and Paul, Lindsay and Lauren.
Yeah,
and each and every one of them do something that's really brilliant. You know, for. The way that they've developed themselves has been really creditable to their mother. Their mother brought them up because I was working.
Yeah.
And she's done a magnificent job with them.
Yeah.
She just fell down a wee bit, trying to bring myself up. I'll get there eventually.
Yeah, she didn't say no to the iron brew and the dairy milk, which is...
No. She's from Glasgow. She knows that.
Listen, that sounds like the perfect meal to me. It really does. But you said whenever this was first broached to you that you knew of Asif's previous past, the documentaries he's made on Senna and Amy, and so had you seen those documentaries?
No,
the things he had seen.
I don't know.
Okay,
the kids played a big part.
Aye, the kids. Yeah. Aye, Paul. Paul knew all
about them. Paul liked Maradona a lot, and Kelly liked Amy. And so they. I'd spoken to Kelly when Amy came out. I remember we swapped messages and on kind of Twitter back in the day. So I think they probably had a word with Dad.
Because I was wondering if Maradona had sealed the deal in a way, because that's, again, such a great football documentary, but about Paul, so much else
Paul
as well.
Says that's his favourite of my films. So I think that's where the family say, Dad, just do it.
Well, Kenny, this is a film podcast. I'd love to ask you about football nonstop, but we are a film podcast. So I have to ask, are you a film fan?
No.
At all? Not at all?
I'm not a big movie fan. If I'm watching the telly, invariably, it's a football that's on.
All right.
that's a fact, isn't it? Wherever I've seen Kenny, wherever we may be, he'll be paying attention to a game. Whatever it is, somewhere. And I'll say that's exactly the same with Diego when I interviewed Diego. Sometimes I was doing interviews with Diego Maradona and he's watching a game while I was interviewing him.
Wow.
Like, on a big screen, like while we're chatting. And so when we met in Liverpool just recently to do like a Q&A that was filmed for the DCP when a film comes out.
Yeah.
You were watching a game on your phone then, weren't you? So, that's what you do. You're a football nut.
Well, can you not take a hint? Yeah. No, but it is. That's what I watch. I wouldn't say. If somebody said, what's your favourite movie?
Or actor. Honestly, I'm really intrigued by the structure of the documentary as well, because it goes up until the moment that Kenny resigned from Liverpool in 91, and obviously focuses on Hillsborough in particular. Hillsborough is the last, 20-25 minutes of the movie, the impact it had and on you and on everybody as well. Asif, first of all, can you talk about that? Because obviously there's huge swathes of Kenny's life and career that come after that you don't focus on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the job of the director, is to work out, well, who are you making a film about? What kind of film are you going to make? What's your style of directing and storytelling? And then also you deciding the framing. And it just felt for me that that's a chapter, a big chapter that starts with Glasgow and starts with Celtic and then comes to Liverpool, and then Liverpool as a player, and then Liverpool as a player manager, and then Liverpool as a manager. Mm-hmm. And then within that, we do have Heysel and we do have Hillsborough. Yep. And everything that comes with Hillsborough. And the moment when Kenny said he was leaving, I was a student then and I was in Wales. And I remember that day very clearly, hearing the news and turning on the television and seeing the live kind of report on the news. And it was quite shocking, actually, mm-hmm. when that happened. And then as we were making the film, Kenny has his amazing career, does it again with Blackburn, comes back to Liverpool and just keeps coming back. And when people are in trouble and in need, Kenny steps up. But it felt like that's almost another film when he came back. For me, that's the director's job in a way. And in a way, I thought, well, this film takes the period from literally Roy the Rovers and Panini stickers and Super 8 films. Yeah. A lot of that footage in Celtic has never been seen before.
Wow.
We found film footage that no one's seen and we got it all digitized. You follow it through to Liverpool. And then after that, we get the Premier League. After that, we get the Champions League.
Everything changes.
It's really what comes next.
Yeah.
Digital, Murdoch, Sky, all of this stuff comes in.
Yeah.
And that is kind of recorded. That is talked about. And this is the period where people seem to try to just erase the records, erase the goals, erase everything that happened. So when you see a list of the greatest goal scorers, Rush doesn't get a mention.
Yeah, I know.
A load of rubbish. So I'm like, I'm going to deal with a period that everyone ignores. Okay. I'm going to show that because that's my period growing up. And I thought that felt the right thing to do in a way.
But Kenny, it means that, the last 20-25 minutes of the movie is focused on Hillsborough. Were you at all nervous about digging back into that and digging back into that, your feelings at the time and how that impacted you? Because it did obviously have a huge impact on you.
Yeah, but I wasn't afraid to go back visiting what happened there. I mean, if people think I was suffering, I wasn't suffering a fraction of what the families were suffering. They were the worst. They were the ones that were more affected by it than anybody. And as I've said before, that's for us, they were supporters of Liverpool Football Club, but this time Liverpool Football Club had to be supporters of the Hillsborough families to help them. So that was what we tried to do, and that as best we could before we got that pretty prominent before we went back into playing football. And when we went back into playing football, they were never far away from our minds. And that year we won the cup, which I think was that, for the particular reason at Hillsborough, that was the most successful thing we could have done.
Yeah.
That was the greatest thing we could have done. We get beat on goals with Arsenal, who won the league.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's not to say we didn't try to win the league or we didn't want to win it. Yeah, we did. But winning the cup final was a great achievement because of what it meant to so many people, especially the families of Hillsborough.
I just wanted to kind of say something on that, which is like, so this is where this kind of this is all happening up in Liverpool. I'm growing up in North London. I'm watching a lot of this on television or listening to it on radio, reading about it in a paper.
Same.
And then I become a film director and then I get a chance to tell this story. And I feel like actually having made lots of documentaries where I'm interested in characters and people, but also the environment and the media and the social setting and the politics of the time. So for me, this became a way to also deal with Hillsborough as a fan from afar who sees a miscarriage of justice, sees what the government, sees what the police, see what the authorities are doing and the football authorities to ordinary people who are suffering and blames them for something. So for me, it's like, I felt this anger and like, it was so upsetting from afar. I wasn't there. My friends were not there. I didn't experience it. So to have the opportunity later to tell a story, which starts off as one type of film and then develops and then becomes a very important part, but continues to be about the character of Kenny and Kenny's position for the people, for the community, for the city, the fans, but also for everyone who's ever been to a football game who now feels safe to take children.
Mm-hmm.
Something awful has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And those people were blamed for what happened to them, but that entirely changed football. And that's why they decided, well, we'll just pretend football began now. So that for me is quite, I'm interested in this stuff. And I wanted to make a film that talked about this and showed this for the generation, not only people who didn't know Kenny as a player, but Kenny as a man, but also the injustice that continues when I go to stadiums and I hear people singing and chanting.
Yeah.
And you're going, you don't know what you're saying. And you see things on social media or fans abroad who've no idea what they're talking about, kind of saying things about Liverpool fans. And you're like,
almost as a reflex.
If I can do something for the family as a fan, as a filmmaker from afar, if I can do something that helps people understand better and tells them to stop doing what they do, but also for the families to feel people believe them. And their story is not going to be forgotten. I mean, that's where filmmaking can come in. That's where these worlds of football and cinema and filmmaking join up for me. And so it was an important moment of British history that I kind of felt like I wanted to put onto the screen and make a film about.
And there can be a danger, I think, as well. I mean, we're now, 36 years away from Hillsborough. There can be a danger that it begins to fade in people's minds. Obviously, there's a generation growing up who never... who won't know what Hillsborough was. We won't know what happened at Hillsborough. Kenny, you were there. We saw it on TV.
We had a screening for the survivors, didn't we? We did a screening and you came in and it was so emotional. I mean, I talked nonstop, right? I could not speak afterwards. It was so, all of the family members there up in Liverpool had lost a son or a father or a brother or a friend or a mum. You know, they'd lost someone, everyone in the room. And it was, they were amazing. They really were very supportive and they loved the film. Like, don't change a frame. And it was really like important for us to do that. One of the people came up to me and said their child had really didn't know their dad because they were so young when their father died at Hillsborough that they now are older watching the film and they can show it to their kids and say, this is what happened. Right, to your father. This is why you don't have a grandfather. This is what happened. And this is how the establishment dealt with it.
Yeah.
This is what, you know, and it's quite hard to keep talking about something. So in a way, sometimes films can do the work for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And make sure people don't forget. And also globally, people will see this film and understand what happened, you know. So that's my part of it. And that's where I come in to tell the story in a particular way. And to show, just let the audience see what happened and understand, you know, how awful this was. And there have been historically lots of terrible miscarriages of justice. And this is one of the worst that has happened in this country.
And just very, very quickly to wrap up. I mean, Kenny, that must be very important to you to know that, or gratifying to you to know that people are going to see it and understand the importance of Hillsborough, the significance of Hillsborough.
Yeah, the only unfortunate thing is, the way that Hillsborough is portrayed is perfect for the families, but there is no recompense for the people who caused it, right? They told lies about the smelling a drink. They told lies about being in pubs, coming down. They told a pack of lies.
Yeah.
And every single one of them who were in the establishment got off with.
Yeah. It's disgrace.
We were as a football club, had a role to play in it because it was our game. Yeah. But also, they had no disrespect whatsoever for the people who had lost life.
Yeah.
Family members, the whole of it. So, as you do very well in Liverpool, we tried our best to be inclusive. Players involved, directors involved, the families involved. And to be fair, the majority, by far the greater majority, are football fans. Paid homage to the families. It doesn't help bring them back, but at least it gives you a wee bit of encouragement about the general public. But not the general public that were in important positions.
Absolutely.
When that happened.
There's a moment in the film where you talk about how difficult it was to hear "You'll Never Walk Alone" for a while after that. Now, this is for both of you. What does that song mean to you? When you hear "You'll Never Walk Alone" now, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's a song it sang at weddings and also sang at funerals. For me, it'll always be iconic for Liverpool Football Club. It's synonymous with Liverpool Football Club and for Celtic Football Club, coincidentally.
Yep.
And that was the first game we played back. So there's always that memory for you. But the memory, the song, I think it's fabulous the way they sing it before the games. And I think it's, for me, it's something that it has its meanings, but also it has the importance as well.
Yeah.
And it really means as much as any other song for myself.
Indeed. And Asif?
I mean, I can't really say more than what Kenny said, but I'm like, as a fan who goes there, you know, I get really emotional when I sing that song in the stadium every time. And then, you know, sometimes you're there and you've just witnessed an amazing match. And because it gets sung at the beginning, it gets sung at the end, just before the ending of the game. And, you know, I love it. You know, I'm in tears. But I like it in the stadium, I have to say. It's one of those things that when you're there and you're experiencing, you're part of the crowd and you have your scarf and you're holding it up, it's beautiful. You know, so it's very special. It's really music and singing collectively and just being in a crowd with 60,000 people, like, it's so special, that feeling. And actually, one of the kind of voices in the film talks about that kind of feeling of community. A lot of people don't have that experience of being part of something like that, where you go and it's like 60,000 of you, 50,000 of you all collectively feeling something. It's beautiful.
Kenny, Asif, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Asif Kapadia, and I can't believe I'm saying these words, Kenny Dalglish, on the Empire podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I was mildly levitating out of my body, but I think I managed to keep a lid on it. Kenny Dalglish, the movie, is out today and tomorrow, as I said earlier, in cinemas around the country, and then on Prime Video from November 4th. It is obviously one for Celtic and Liverpool fans, but I would recommend it for all football fans. And beyond that, as a portrait of a man touched with genius, but one who has remained utterly grounded throughout his career and life. If you're interested in psychology and how people can stay humble at the height of their success, then this is one for you as well. There are more interview specials coming your way very, very soon. If you're a fan of K-pop Demon Hunters, we've got one that'll be right up your street. And also the regular Empire podcast comes out every Friday. If you don't already listen, do listen. It is an absolute ton of film-related fun. Okay. That is enough for me. Finally, I'm off to get a big old bottle of Iron Brew and a massive bar of Dairy Milk for my breakfast. Hey, if it's good enough for King Kenny, it's good enough for one of his loyal subjects. Thanks for listening. See you next time. You'll never walk alone. Bye.